It's a Cosby Gray anomaly and metastable dark matter particles. So let me start by saying what I guess everybody in this room already know, that there's a cosmic gray anomaly seen by Pamela Attic Fermi and Hess. Now the real question is whether it's due to annihilating dark matter, it became dark matter, or astrophysics. I will not address this issue. What I will do is assume that it has to do with dark matter. Furthermore, if it is dark matter, it has several interesting features, like there's large annihilation cross sections that you would need to explain it. And it, you know, that preferentially has to annihilate into leptons. Okay. So what I will focus on in this talk is I'll ask the following question. How does the discussion change if a dark sector includes metastable particles? Okay. So let me start with the scales in the problem. Or I make some heuristic argument of what the scales could be. Because I don't want to cover the whole spectrum of metastable particles. So let me assume that I have a dark matter particle, and in addition, there's a, in the dark sector, there's a, an additional particle which is metastable. Furthermore, I assume that phi decays through higher dimensional operators. Okay. So what should I stick in the suppression? As a guidance, I will use a CISO scale. Okay, this is more or less motivated. I have this preferential coupling to the lepton, so let's stick a CISO scale. So if I turn the neutrino masses to the lambda, which suppresses the so the lambda from the CISO. So that's the scaling with the Yukawas. So we know, first of all, that I didn't put the Yukawa equal to 1. And the neutrino mass is sitting there. So the scale is at the order of 10 to the 13 GeV. So let me now start with the single, the simplest dimension. So the first, the simplest suppression of phi decay. So let me start with dimension 5 operator. Now the decay will be to the standard model sector. We go through a dimension 5 operator, which is suppressed by 1 inverse power of this CISO scale. So now you turn things around. The decay time will be in microseconds, and it scales as a square of this scale. And I also put phi mass to be the TV. Okay, so that means that if I have this setup where phi is metastable, decays through dimension 5 operators, what I would be changing is something in the early universe. And in the following slides, I will use this to explain the large boost factors. Okay.
The m phi in the linear power times a lepton mass squared, right?
I'm making very heuristic arguments here. Just, you know, I mean, you can kill whatever I'm saying immediately. It's like, I can change this from 0.1 to 1, and of course, this scales by 2 orders of magnitude. Right? I'm just, what I'm trying to say is that if you want to come up with a model, it is possible to come up with a model. Right? But going, I mean, the scale is the dimension 5 operator, the time scale the dimension 5 operator gives you and dimension 6 operator give you, these are really very well separated. Right? So if I want to go to dimension 6 operator, the time scale of the decay will be 100 kilo years. And then again, now you have an even higher scaling with the CISO scale and a higher scaling with the mass. So if I change the what I call a CISO scale, or I change what the phi mass is, of course I will shift these decay times. But anyway, so these decay times now are, of course, much larger. So what does it mean? If I have a phi which is being produced, it will fly kiloparsec distances. Right? So it, will, it can affect things that the signals that we see on the galactic distances. Right, so this will be the second part of my talk. I will discuss how the signal changes if I have this intermediate metastable particles.
So far, it's never thermal.
Yeah, that's the very final slide. Okay, so the outline. So first, as I said, I'll use the dimension 5 operators and talk about the boost factors, and then I'll move on how to avoid the gamma ray constraints from the galactic center using this metastable setup, and then conclude at the end. So let me start with the large cross sections. A very basic slide. So what I will call a boost factor is the beast sitting down here. So I normalized, okay, so let me start from the top. First of all, you use the dark matter relic density. You assume that the dark matter is a thermal relic. You will get the annihilation cross section times V at the freeze out, which is this number which we saw many times during the last few days. The cosmic ray flux, if it's due to dark matter annihilation, will go as this annihilation cross section times V and the number density of dark matter squared. So now what I will define as a boost factor will include both the cross section and the dark matter density, which I will normalize to the cross section at freeze out and the average dark matter density squared. Okay, so this is the boost factor that I will use. So now let me show one slide from this paper. Or the two authors of here are sitting in the audience. So you do a model independent fit to Pamela, look at many different channels, and you see that the boost factors that you're getting are very large. So depending, of course, on the dark matter mass, but you see that the boost factors are very, very large. So how large? I mean, these boost factors are really large. So let me do the following simple thing. Let's look at the unitarity bound that you would have on the cross section. So go to the S-wave annihilation. This is the unitarity bound. So now the only thing I need to do is normalize this number by the freeze out cross section. That's your number, how it scales with the mass. And you see that this number is actually not much, much larger than what you had on the previous slide. Let me go back. Right? It's sitting here, right? 10 to the 6 is sitting here. Okay. Right. So you see that if I'm well above TV masses, I start hitting the unitarity bound. So I'm really an order of magnitude away. So how to explain these large boost factors? There are many ideas who have been proposed, like Zomerfeld enhancement, which was already discussed, annihilation through resonance, recombination through wimponiums. What I will focus on is this non-thermal dark matter. So as I said, I'll assume that one of the two guys is metastable. Then you can avoid the large boost factors just by not having annihilation, but a decaying dark matter, and having a different temperature in dark matter sector. This was also discussed by Nelson. Okay, so let me move on what, how can you avoid the large boost factors by having a slightly more a non-minimal dark sector. So now I change the notation a bit. So I have two fields in the dark sector. Chi2 is metastable, so this is what I called phi before. And it decays after it freezes out. So what I have is a Chi2 will decay into the dark matter plus the standard model. Chi1 is the dark matter that we observe now, and also gives the cosmic ray anomaly, right? So why does this work is because I can now decouple the annihilation cross-section of chi2 from the annihilation cross-section of chi1, which is the one that you see as a signal in the cosmic ray, right? So what's going on is that chi 2 freezes out, so the cross section for this guy can be much smaller than needed to expand the Fermera signal. Then it repopulates, so then chi 1 also freezes out. The cross section for this guy is much larger, so the relic density is also lower. But then you repopulate the relic density of chi 1. So this is plotted in this plot. So I have the blue line is the density normalized to the entropy density. So you see that chi 2 freezes out and then it will decay. The black lines are taking different ratios for cross sections of chi 1 versus chi 2, right? So the dark matter freezes out and then it gets repopulated. If you make a very large ratio of cross section, annihilation cross sections, you will again repopulate the dark matter density, but there is also going to be a washout effect. Okay, so what do I need for this to work? So to have large boost factors, I need this ratio, I need the hierarchy between the annihilation cross section. So the problem of having large boost factors, I turned into a problem of engineering these two large annihilation cross sections. Furthermore, I also have two bounds on the decay time of the metastable guy. So first, there's an upper bound on gamma 2, just because I need a decay after the freeze out. I need a decay after the freeze out, which will not involve too much washout effect. Okay, so that's what you will get for the decay time, 10 to the minus 7 seconds. And you, B was the ratio of the annihilation cross sections. And then, of course, if I want to avoid bounds from the nuclear synthesis, I have an upper bound on the decay time. And as I said, for this window, the scale, if I choose dimension 5 operator, the scale is roughly the CISO scale. Where is it? It's final 5 to the times 10 to the 15 GeV, and the lower one is 10 to the 12 GeV. And the other thing to note is that if you produce these guys at LHC, they will fly microscopic distances.
Less than a thousand seconds would be fine. There are some dominant species, right? It doesn't change the expansion rate of the universe. And the energy injection never matters until they pull through the theory
cave. So, I mean, here, this bound is actually even fuzzier because you don't have to even decay to standard model.
Right.
So
even if you decay to lepsons, it even never matters until 10,000 seconds.
Okay. So let me move on to the dimension 6 case. So gammas from galactic center. So, as I said, the assumption is that the cosmic ray anomaly is due to dark matter annihilating. It annihilates into charged particles. Therefore, inevitably, I'll have highly energetic gammas from Bremsstrahlung, at least from Bremsstrahlung. So that's a curse and a blessing. One is that you have a signal of dark matter, if it is dark matter. But right now, there is a tension between the cosmic ray anomaly and the gammas from the galactic center. I think this was first pointed out by Cirelli and Strumia, if I'm not mistaken. But what I took here is a bit recent paper where you see the what does this do to you. Let's ignore all the other constraints, but let's focus on the let's say this one. So it's dark matter annihilating to mu plus mu minus. Taking an FW profile, the green band is if you fit to Pamela only, and then this red bands are if you fit to Pamela and Fermi and Hess. And you see that you're excluded by, I mean, you have a tension, between the highly energetic photons you see from the galactic region and galactic center. So this is one of the two is galactic region, and the other one is galactic center. I don't know which one's which. Okay. So how can you avoid this? Either you make you need a much less cuspy dark matter profile, so the communist one, or as I will argue, there's no problem if you have the following setup. You annihilate into these phis. Phi will decay into the standard model particles. And if phi is long-lived, they will decay away from the galactic center and you avoid the bounds. Okay, so again, dimension six operator, you're at the galactic scales. Okay, I need a, maybe this slide is superfluous, but still, there is a very easy way to think about what is going on. If I go to the non-relativistic limit for phi, so take phi to be relatively heavy. You don't need this to for the whole setup to work, but it helps for having a very easy understanding of. I mean, I can make then a nice plot, because in this limit, what will happen is that I can replace in all the formulas I can replace the dark matter density with some effective dark matter density, right? So the photon flux, for instance, will be proportional to the annihilation cross section normalized to something, the injection spectrum, and the integrated mass density over the line of sight. Okay. So what will change from not having this intermediate state is that I will decay away. So the electrons are being produced away from the annihilation point. This is this. Of course, it goes down with the exponential. So this is this factor. I integrate over the initial dark matter density and introduce the effective dark matter density. Okay, so how does this look? So as you see, I have one knob that I can dial, and that's the decay length of this intermediate state. So if I'm looking at scales which are much smaller than lambda. Lambda is the decay length. What I will see is that the effective raw density is smaller than the dark matter one, right? Just because it decays away from the production point. So let me look at a few choices of lambda. So take 10 parsecs, 100 parsec, 1 kiloparsec, 10 kiloparsec, and 100 kiloparsec. So if I sit here toward the galactic center, this is again 10 parsecs, 100 parsecs, 1 kiloparsecs, that's where we sit. And then it's the edge of the halo. So if you sit toward the galactic center, you see that the larger the lambda, the more suppression I have. The same thing is here, where I just normalize to the NFW profile. Okay? Then if R is of the order of lambda, so let's look at this line here, 10 kiloparsecs. When you reach 10 kiloparsecs, you'll actually have an overproduction of photons, just because now these guys that are coming from the galactic center are starting to decay. Okay. And then when you look at the scales which are much larger than lambda, you get back to the NFW profile, so you're back to the annihilation. Let's say take this point one. Okay, so 100 parsecs, you see that you immediately go back to the annihilation phase. Okay, so what does this do for you, right? As I said, I'm dialing this knob, and what I'm actually doing is I'm dialing a signal from something which looks like purely annihilating dark matter to something which looks like purely decaying dark matter. This map is actually exact for a particular profile. So for an NFW profile, this is exactly what's going on. And the way to see is that let's say if I have a profile with scale which goes as r to the minus gamma, then square it, right? You integrate over, and the effective one will go as 2 gamma minus 1. So this is just simple dimensional analysis. Okay? Then for the NFW, gamma is 1. So you see that I get back, I mean, just because gamma is 1, when I'm looking at scales which are much smaller than lambda, the guy here, so 2 minus 1 is 1 over r, so it looks exactly as a decaying dark matter, right? So pictorially, you see that lambda equals 10 kiloparsecs interpolates between a signal or a dependence of a signal on r for a decaying dark matter, and it goes to the annihilating dark matter. Or the other way to see this is maybe if I, instead of looking at the dependence on r, if I just look at the dependence on angle away from the galactic plane, we see again lambda of 10 kiloparsecs sits in between the dependences for purely so decaying dark matter or purely annihilating dark matter. Okay. So now let me discuss whether this works when you put in data, right? Whether you have enough suppression. So what I plot here is for the galactic center and the galactic ridge, the two regions that were observed by Hess, the J factor. So this was the astrophysics factor relevant for how large the flux is. So this is the dotted line. Is a J factor, which is for purely annihilating dark matter. Then you dial your knob, and you see that I get a large suppression. Right? You can have two orders of magnitude or more suppression, depending on what I choose for lambda. OK, so let's do the fits. Okay. So in the fits, we assume, I mean, I just want to demonstrate that the whole thing works, right? So I'll choose a particular decay for phi, I choose an NFW profile, a propagation model, the preferred one, then get the injection spectra from PTR, vary the background, and I also split the Fermi and ATIC data. So I have two sets, one will be Fermi plus the rest, and the other one will be ATIC plus the rest, just to see the effect. There's one slide for here. There's a technical detail here. What we're doing is we're modifying the effective profile density. So if we want to do many different profiles, I need to calculate this I of lambda, and everybody else can decouple except for Pierre if you want. So I of lambda for different profiles. Right? So if I use, for instance, the expansion in Bessel functions, this really takes a long time if you want to compute the I of lambda. But what you can do is you can write actually a differential equation for I of lambda. You solve it on a PC in a few seconds. So then I can dial, I can change the profile system. Okay, so what does it do with the fits? So this region here, okay, so these different panels are for different values of lambda. Lambda 0 kiloparsecs, no, this is purely an annihilating one. I turn on the whole thing, 1 kiloparsec, 10 kiloparsec, 100 kiloparsec. The gray area here is Pamela only region. The black or the dark red one is Pamela plus ATIC, and the red region below it is Pamela plus Fermi. Okay, so not much change in the preferred region whether I take one set or the other set. And these are the exclusion curves from galactic region, galactic center. The difference between these two curves is that the dotted line is exactly is the prescription of Marco and Alessandro. Is You take the measurements, you never want to be 3 sigma above with just purely from dark matter. But you can be a bit more aggressive, or I would say maybe reasonable, is that you see this, the slope, I mean, the what they measure really looks like a power law. So you fit for a power law for the background, and then on top of it, you say that I fit for the dark matter signal, and I never want to be, I mean, now I don't want to, I exclude dark matter if the fit is too poor, right? So that's the solid line. Okay, whether you trust one prescription or the other, you can be comfortable with one exclusion curve or the other. Well, the problem is that if you're too conservative, right, you can be allowing for scenarios which should be really excluded by data already. So now you see that when you dial the knob, you start to this the date. I mean, the exclusions go away, right? They're less random. Okay, so comparison with data. This is comparing with Pamela. And comparing with Hess and Artic. So here, I'm just showing the case where we didn't use Artic in the data. The other thing that we looked at is also if we are excluded by the neutrino bounds. So taking a particular, I mean, the preferred minimum, you see that if you look at the super Kamiokande data, when they look at the galactic center, you're not excluded. I mean, you're not excluded even if you see that, even if you have pure annihilation. Okay, so now to your question, right? Can chi and phi be thermal relics simultaneously, right? So if I forget about the fact that I have this metastable guy, I have the same problem as I had before, right? Chi can be a thermal relic, but I have to do something to the annihilation cross-section, right? So now what, I mean, of course, you can play the same game here, right? I will have either a Sommerfeld enhancement or somehow I detach the annihilation cross-section that I see from cosmic ray anomaly and the one that will give me the relic density. The problem is really with phi, right? Phi is a metastable and it decays in 100 kilo years, right? So now you really have to start worrying about modifying the light element abundances, right? Because phi will decay into standard model. I will at least produce some, I mean, I will produce energetic particles, at least some photons, and these photons will dissociate, will photo dissociate the light elements. So what, so taking these bounds, you see that the relic density of phi has to be at least 10 to the minus 3 of the of chi, and actually much smaller if you go to higher to higher decay times. So that again will mean that if I want to have phi, which is also a thermal relic, the annihilation cross section for phi has to be much larger than for chi. Of course, this is possible, but you will have to now do some gymnastics if you want to build a model. Right? If you paid attention, at any point before, I didn't use the annihilation cross section for phi. So, in principle, you can build a model. But
I think that is probably more if you have this chi's annihilating into phi's, right, with a relatively large cross section. And it goes back onto the thermal facade of phi and so on. The number of densities of phi are going to be big, right?
Yeah, the problem is, I mean, see, I'm.
And big I, we did, so this is long period of time.
We didn't think very, very hard about whether you can really make it to work, right? So if I come with a model, then I would really start worrying, right? Because what you're saying is that even though chi's freeze out, I'm still making the phi's.
How large is this? They freeze out, if you started from chi's, you know, abundance order one relative to other species, you would necessarily create an abundance again or the wonderful finds.
Yeah.
That's
Mm-hmm. So whether you can make things work, it's really a question. Yeah. It's really a question. Okay. So let me conclude. So I provided two scenarios with metastable particles. And so if you take either of the two seriously, they will solve one of the two problems. The one with the dimension 5 operators, it will solve the large full spectrum. And the one with the dimension 6 operators, it will solve the problem that you don't have a photon signal from the galactic center. Thank you.
Back to the results.
What?
Can we go back to your results plot? Yeah.
Oh, this one?
Yeah. Here, so what would be the difference in your conclusion or results if you were to fit the Eddy data instead of Fermi data?
Yeah, I think the fit is a bit worse. So I think it goes from 83 to 100. And
but the nature of your particles are the same.
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah. But I mean, how much should I put emphasis on this? I don't know, because we only looked at mu plus mu minus in a particular shape. So with a different annihilation mode, we maybe prefer the
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, one comment about which should be the true bound from photons. The point is that we can only compute the part of the photons generated by dark matter unless we have a model where we can compute everything one loop free body. So in general, we only include a part of the photons. So a lucky model, maybe the part that we can compute has a wrong shape. The full maybe has the right shape, and this is why this is sensible to make this conservative fit.
That's why we also show both of them.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, if the full model is lucky, the true bound is the conservative one.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that you'll have a three-body decay, which will modify the gamma shape such that it will make it look like more like a power.
This, for example, happens in the minimal dark matter model. It's not impossible. Can I also ask a question? Can you tell something more about this differential equation for the Hilbert function?
Mm-hmm, sure. Okay, I'm glad it was not only useful for Pierre. So what you do is you just take this ansatz, you plug it in into the full differential equation for psi. So the psi is the electron flux, right, or the electron density, and you'll immediately derive this equation. I mean, it's really a zero work. No. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, do you want me to?
So you can have the I twiddle. You can compute it all over the Milky Way, in fact, in doing so, right?
Yeah, but
because in principle, we define the I twiddle really for the location of the solar system.
Yeah. So here, the one that you.
Okay, go ahead.
The one that you use is you take R and Z.
It's the location.
At it's our location, that's right. But the point is that you only have to, it's the same benefit of splitting, of splitting this into the astrophysics plus it's a factorized form of particle physics and astrophysics, right? So, what you might ask is that this thing here, I will have to solve numerically again, right? So I could start with the differential equation and start and solve it from the beginning. But you want to have this factorized form because it's easier to scan. Right? So
you consider the propagation parameters to be the same the final location here or any other point in the data.
So once again,
and you said you can solve this for any other point other than the location.
Yeah, so inside. This thing will not work if I have a diffusion coefficient which varies mm-hmm. over the galaxy. And then I don't have the factor.
Yeah,
that's right.
Now, no further questions. Let's thank you.